Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there.
It is my belief through my experience that most of us default to leading in a way that we think we would want to be led. Which maybe in some circumstances can work. For me, it did not work. My leadership style is just tell me what to do, put some hard goals in front of me, kind of get out of my way. You know, if I need help, I'll ask for it. And what I've learned is that most people aren't that way. I think this is where like the DISC assessment things can be valuable, being an awareness of how other people think and want to be communicated to. And so for me, as we dive into leadership mistakes that Andy has made. No, most of these are mine.
Yeah. You're the premise of this whole series.
It is. This is my life story reflection. Is that I think unhealthy leaders, and this doesn't mean you're not a good leader, but I think unhealthy, we'll use that word today, is maybe lacking like awareness, is leading others how you would want to be led. And I've learned that most people in organization are not the high D, I like, start a company intensity, right, visionary type leaders. And so it's almost a hindrance if the leader at all thinks that they need to motivate their team or communicate to their team in the same way that they would choose to be communicated with.
Yeah. And you're going to burn through people. I mean, if you're a high D, which is a driven, goal-oriented, self-motivated, you know, which is great. It's really important to have those people in leadership. If you lead others as if that is their motivation, then you're there's very few, you can have very few of those people in the same room or in the same company, unless there's some real agreement on, you know how to dance with each other. Yep. You can't have a lot of those people in the same room. And so if you're leading everyone in the same way that you are motivated or like to be spoken to, or you're for the most part, you're going to burn through 75-80% of people.
Yeah,
they might stick around. I remember talking with the advisor's administrator, and what she had tolerated for 10 years and the way she was treated was just unbelievable. And everything that she described about this advisor she worked for, who was very successful at being an advisor because of these traits, he led her in the way that he would like to have been led, and she just felt completely walked over. And
but she put up with it for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was more of an issue. She just didn't have a lot of self-esteem. So she felt like, you know, I should just be grateful for the job.
Yeah.
But I would say, I wouldn't be surprised if I reached out to her today and she had a different job, because when someone's, you know, comes to her and says, hey, I will lead you in this way, or here's our culture. Culture is a big deal. And we'll talk about that with some actual stats from Pew Research today. But yeah, you talked about the first part, the first element that we need to be aware of, which is that most people lead by default instead of with intention.
Yeah.
So you were led by, you know, you're in a system. That's where I think most people enter this industry is you're one of 100, and we hope that three of you stick around and they sort of run through. Now that you have your own company, you're hiring, you're leading people on a day-to-day basis, what are the things that you've had to do to become aware of how you lead, and then what are the ways that you've been able to improve in your leadership style that just do not come naturally to you?
I think for me in growing in that, the first step was just kind of awareness of looking back. And a big part of me hoped that I would have had great mentorship, that I would have had more instances of learning how to do something better versus watching people do it poorly with bad results. And then me eventually having to realize like, oh, I don't want to do it that way.
But is that how you mostly learned? By the bad or?
That's my story.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah. I've met great advisors. They had a great mentor and they were honorable and they communicated well. And it's like, I don't know if in the business world, there's a lot of those people that have kind of done their work and lead with humility and yeah. Still have intensity. And so for me, as I've progressed in that and look back and be like, oh, I don't want to be like those people. I didn't know any better early on. And so it took me longer than I wanted it to kind of pause and say, okay, do people, we may be getting some results at some level, but am I bringing out the best in people? Am I, you know, creating this culture that people would want to be in for a long period of time? And it's not just so short-term results focused.
Mm-hmm.
So as I became aware of that, I was like, okay, this is not how I want to lead, even though we were getting results and people, I think, kind of like their job and it was okay, but it wasn't great, is I had to eventually get to the place of kind of humility of being like, no matter how hard I try, no matter how many leadership books I read, my personality is not, you know, I wouldn't be great at HR. And yeah. I don't look forward to coming into work, sitting down and being like, hey, how's it going? Like, I'm just not the cheerleader type. But people do say, hey, I want to be around you because you're driven and I know you care. So I have those components. I eventually had to find somebody to come into the organization to help me with some of the accountability conversations so I can offload some of that. So that frees me up to be a little bit more of the coach cheerleader that I want to be.
Yeah.
While also fully accepting that my default, where I thrive the most, is in more of like the driver, let's get results, who's coming with me,
right,
kind of energy.
Right.
But it all started with me just stepping back and saying, what is my optimal situation? Like me living kind of not faking it till I make it, but like, this is who I am, surrounding myself with people to complement that. And then also recognizing, here are the things I don't want to do.
So two things there. One is you have to mature as a leader. That's factual. But the other is, don't deny who you are and how you're wired, and that you may not be the best person for that. So organizationally, it may be wise to have someone in that operations, in that sort of another layer of management to oversee the staff and make sure those things are taken care of.
Yeah.
Because you think about this from a physical, like, you need to have a vision as a leader. You need to be looking way out in the distance and thinking about those big things. And then you also need to be sort of looking down and around you and saying, how are things going here? Those are really different places to be looking. And I know you have to have multiple hats and do multiple things as a leader, but that's a really hard to switch between those things.
Yeah.
I will say that, and we'll link to both these articles from Pew Research, but one of their stats is that only 55% of people, this is just last year in 2023, 55% of employees said that they have a mentor, someone that mentors them at work, that they look at as a mentor. And I think that means around half of all people employed in professional environments have no one that they essentially feel like cares about them, is helping them grow. They just show up to work and they sort of do their job.
Yep.
And that's fine. But is that optimal? I mean, how are you going to grow as an organization unless people feel like that growth is built in?
Yeah. With your story, so if you would ask me that question, how many people do you feel like they do not have a mentor? I would have said 90%.
Yeah.
Like that 45% of people feeling like they do feels super high to me, just based on my experience.
Well, let me ask you this. I think there's a difference, though, between leaders having mentors.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would agree with you. Most people in leadership, 90% of them, I think that they don't. But I think from the employee level, like at our office, people would say, yeah, Stan is a mentor to me, right? Like, I think people would say that. But I think from a leadership perspective, a lot of leaders get to the top and then they're lonely and they don't pursue those mentor relationships. So
that did not surprise you. In your experience in different companies, that you would assume about half of the people would say they have a mentor. Because mentor to me feels like a pretty strong word. Like, there's intentionality there. There's relationship there.
Yeah, I think the mentor word is, it's not, that to me is not a position. A mentor is not you're a senior VP and I'm a VP, so you're above me. Mm-hmm. Or you're, you know, whatever. A mentor is someone who's saying, I care about your development as a person. And I would just say that most workplaces, it's just you sort of coming and do your job. There's not a lot of, hey, we want to help you grow into this. It's sort of just come in and sit in your spot and do your job. Mm-hmm. And we've done this. We talked with a lot of advisors, administrators. We worked with a lot of advisors about developing their team. And there's a lot of people that go, yeah, your job is to just do your job. It's not to grow or to change. It's to just do this job. And what we have found through this research, and you know, it is that when people don't feel like they're working towards something bigger or they're getting better, that they'll leave. Like they're three times more likely to leave if they don't feel like their leader is investing in them. So they asked this, and like they're 77% would say, I am going to stay here because of this leadership. And 25%, if you don't have it, are like, yeah, I'm gone. Like I'm gone. And the idea that you're three times more likely to retain people because you're intentional about saying, hey, I want to lead you in this.
Yeah.
Is stopping doing the work sometimes so you can work on your people. And that's just really hard for people to do. But if you don't do it, it will cost you.
Yeah. So as soon as you learn that like your people are your greatest asset.
Yeah.
And I've had to break into a place where like legacy is somewhat stalled if it's all up to Sten. Whereas like the next generation season of legacy is it has to be very little about Sten and more about everybody else. That's the only way it'll, you know, be more of a company than just a job for Sten.
Right.
But I think as we talk, we'll move on to the next one. But for this one, the biggest thing I think is you're hearing this. What we're not saying is change who you are completely as a leader and try to be somebody else. But if we can all agree, and I think it'd be hard to argue this, is that your team does not need to be led the way you would want to be led.
Right.
So if there's any part of you that senses that you're just operating out of a default, you're probably missing it to some degree. And so reflection number one, as you guys listen to this, are you intentional about knowing your people and leading them in the way that they need to be inspired and led? Or are you just operating the way that your story has dictated or your personal motivation is? Because if that's the case, you need to make a pivot.
I think the key word you use there before we go to the next one is intentional. If, you know, when you ask me, have you worked out? That's an easy question. It's a yes or no. Are you intentional about that or not? Because people don't wake up and by default just go to some other place and lift heavy things like that. You know, like by default, you get up, you eat, take a shower, you whatever. Like that's what you do just enough. Being intentional to say, yes, I can point to a book or a meeting or a conversation or yeah, we bought everybody lunch. That's intentionality.
That's right.
So if you're not sure if you're being intentional or not, then I can tell you you're not being intentional. Because if you are, you would know.
Yeah.
So what's the next one that when it comes to understanding your effectiveness as a leader that we can help people understand so they can get better right away?
Yep. This one was a question submitted by a friend. Definitely not personal experience in this one. The leading to take care of others, which was my primary leadership style up until a few years ago.
Mm.
And again, while not bad on the surface or negative, the repercussions of that over years, it took a while for this style to kind of reveal itself as not being ideal. And I think where I struggle with this is a few kind of core beliefs was you're a good boss if people work with you forever, which is not true. Life happens, seasons end. People, you know, grow as much as they can with your company and then they decide to move on. So that was something I had to kind of override in my mind. But also it went further back to my own personal need to be liked, reinforced. I cared about my team members, but also I needed something from them as well, which was tell me I'm a good leader, tell me I'm a good boss.
Yeah, your emotions were dependent upon their emotions in that. That means you're obviously going to try to keep them as happy as you can at all times.
Yep.
Even if their performance wasn't what it should be.
Yep.
Right.
And so in this, for me, I had to finally get to a place to where I recognize, and we see this with a lot of our advisors. Most of the time I experience one of two extremes as we coach advisors. One is where I was, where it's like, you want to be liked. So you're kind of catering to short-term needs. You haven't probably set high standards for behavior or results. You mention it and you keep reinforcing it and you want to coach people to get it, but there's probably not some lines in the sand that you're not willing to let fade because you're worried about the potential pushback for it. Or we experience advisors that kind of overcompensate and their leadership style is like super intense, aggressive. You hit the goal or you're out. There's not much coaching connection. That for me, I had to figure out like, no, there's a balance. Like you can care about people, but still hold them to high standards. that sometimes caring about somebody saying, hey, this job isn't good for you, how do we exit you honorably? And so the mistake I made was caring too much, which I think for a long time, by its definition, I was like, that's a good thing. This is great. And I was willing to say caring for my people is more important than the results we get. So therefore, I'm going to accept average outcomes versus saying, no, we can be elite. Like, we don't have to accept average outcomes, but I can still care for my people. Like, both of those can be true.
So one of the stats from, they call it the Great Resignation, which was in through COVID 2021, when so many people reset, there's a massive amount of layoffs, and then people who still had their jobs started switching their jobs. Okay. In COVID, 63% of people who left their position voluntarily said that one of the major reasons they left was because there was no opportunities for advancement. I think that's interesting because it speaks to what we're talking about here about people want to be challenged. They don't need you to just be happy with them all the time. Like, people want to grow. And I think that if you're just measuring your team by everyone's getting along, we haven't had any difficult conversations, like, I think that's a poor measurement. I think that you should be having, if you really want to grow, that's like saying, you know, how was your workout? It was like, it was good. I didn't lift anything. Like, if there should be tension because you're pushing up against limits. And my point is, people want to grow and be pushed, not just they want peace all the time, right? Yeah. They don't want conflict for the sake of conflict. But I appreciate when you and I have our conversations. I appreciate when our team members, because here's the bottom line. If it's not worth it, you wouldn't have the conversation. You would just accept mediocrity, or you would say, I don't want to rock the boat. But when you have a mature, healthy work environment and any other form of relationship, you're willing to have the hard conversations because it's worth it. And the mission is bigger than just, oh, are we getting along today? Yeah. Right.
And for me, and I think this is true in a lot of areas of life, is that I was not capable of sitting in whatever came from the other person. Meaning, if I held somebody to a standard and that triggered them in some way, they felt like I was, it was an unreasonable standard, or you're being mean to me because you're telling me, hey, we set a goal and you didn't hit it. I was not capable of sitting in whatever they were about to feel.
What does it look like to sit in that?
Versus, I didn't want,
like, what's the alternative to sitting in it?
I was more worried about what I was going to feel based on their feeling. And I wanted to avoid that uncomfortable feeling that I was going to get. So I wasn't willing to have the right hard conversations. And this is true in parenting for me too. I've heard this stat that a lot of times parents can't handle their kids' emotions because of what it makes them feel.
Right.
I'm not a good parent. Whatever is triggered inside of a parent is the main reason they yell at their kids, they're impatient, because it's what's being triggered in them, go than what's happening outside of them.
Yeah.
So for me in the workplace, it was also, man, if I sit down and I trigger this person in a way, as opposed to being curious and being able to separate myself from their story, I latched onto it and I didn't want to feel what I was about
to feel. Let's do one real quick. This is not true. This is not true. Well, let me tell a story and then we'll do a quick
true story.
This story is true. Okay. My son, who is 16, said to me in the last, I don't know, probably 3 months, you know, by the way, the story ends happily, so don't worry. He's still alive and lives in my home and loves me. But he said, you know, it's 4 feet from me. And he said, you know, I hate you and you're a horrible parent. Or I mean, it was something, but he said, I know he said, I hate you. He's like, I hate you and I hate living here, or something like that. Okay. And I remember in that very moment, what it triggered in me is I hope he wasn't looking at me because I smiled, like I smirked. And I thought, I remember saying that to my parents. I remember like that same tone and intensity or whatever. And my parents, I appreciate how they responded. And I tried to respond the same way, which was, I just didn't really respond. I went, okay. In the moment, he probably hated me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, a half hour later, I walk up in the room. I don't say anything. I kind of let him storm off. And I walk up and he's like playing games or something like that. And I was like, how are you doing? He's like, I'm okay. And I was like, okay, we moved on from I hate you, right?
Are you talking about that?
Yeah. Right? And I was like, okay, well, are we good? Yeah, we're good. Okay, he's like, you think he said he's sorry.
Yeah.
My point is that if I feel like, gosh, I'm not a good parent and he should hate me, then I'm like, well, why? Or that's not true. Or I want to defend myself versus going, you know what? That's just him having some emotions and I'm okay with those happening. Yeah. They're not actually a reflection on me. They're a reflection on him and he doesn't like boundaries and he's growing up. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, for you, if someone comes to you and says, Stan, I don't feel like you care. Or Stan, you know, it seems to be all about the numbers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Something that could trigger you to get defensive or go, oh my gosh, they don't like me.
Yep.
Or like, what does it mean as a leader if people who listen to this then go have a conversation? Those, you know, if you're listening right now and you think, I need to have a conversation with my team. And someone on your team says, you know, Mike, I just feel like you don't really care about me as a person. Mm-hmm. What would an unhealthy response be and what would a healthy response be?
Well, for me, my unhealthy response in the past was, I'm going to prove you wrong with facts right now. Like, I'm going to win this because I'm going to present something in a way that like is factually you can't argue it.
Okay.
That doesn't help. That doesn't, people don't feel connected, feel heard.
Yeah.
Learn that. It took me too long. Now it would be, I'd lead more with curiosity.
Yeah.
One, like, what's causing you to say that?
Yeah.
If you were in my shoes, what could I be doing within reason that would satisfy that? Because if I have a team member that's like, well, I need you to meet with me every day. And right. I've had some young advisors where when I got down to it, they just wanted me to do it for them.
Hmm.
That when I set a goal and a standard and they didn't hit it,
yeah,
it they were then triggered in their own, you know,
somehow it became your fault. Yeah.
Somehow it was always like, you keep changing things or there was no clarity. And I'd say, well, did you ever come ask me for help?
Yeah.
No. At the end of the day, if something's not working, are you allowed to change it if it still gets a good result? Well, I guess so. Okay, so what are we talking about? You know, and so I think it's such a stark difference now that I'm so close to it still when I wasn't doing it in a great way. And what's tricky about this is it wasn't that obvious. Like, people weren't quitting mad at me. I wasn't getting sued, you know, by yeah. ex-employees for our behavior. It was a little more nuanced than that.
I like the curiosity part, though. I think the difference is pushing against it versus curiosity is, tell me more about that. It's literally their opposites. Defense is a block, a push, a rejection. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is like you're not doing a good job. And you're like, oh, really? Tell me more about that. You know, like, tell me some details of that. Tell me why you feel that way. Tell me a specific time where you felt like that. Is the opposite of, I think, our natural reaction, which is to just go, that's not true, and I will defend how I feel. Because yep. the reality of it is that feelings are valid, but they're not always to be trusted.
Yeah, right? That's
and
good.
They certainly cannot be our only guide. So it's like, it's fine that you feel that way, but it's one of those trust but verify. Like, okay, you feel that way. Let's talk more about that. Because the reality is people go home and they experience things. And guess what? When they come to work, they bring those things with them.
That's right.
Right. And I just think that it's very abnormal to have healthy conflict in almost every area of life. And so if you can model that at work, that's a great place to do it. So yeah, our caution is to do not lead with the goal of being liked.
Before we jump to the next one, something that I've also learned to be true is that if a team member is not in a position of leadership, there's always information they don't have.
Mm.
And so what their opinion is almost always uninformed. And that doesn't make it invalid. It just means it's more emotion
yeah.
and assumption based to where you can just lean in and learn things. But there's probably still a lot of stuff you're not going to share with that employee or team member
yeah.
that they would need in order to have a clear view. And so part of that makes me as a leader know, like, you almost need to be okay not being fully understood or fully liked at all times. The hope is, though, is you're earning trust with yeah. your team yeah. and you can share with them what they need to know at right times and always have an open door. They can come ask questions. But I think if you're looking for like full understanding, full emotional connection and understanding, like, that's yeah. probably never going to happen.
Yeah.
Next one, we'll run through these last two pretty quick. Not understanding how you communicate by default. You had a great point about this of like where we rest unless we're being intentional.
Yeah.
You put it like rest down.
Yeah. We, I mean, this speaks to what I believe, and this is true on a physical level, spiritual level, is sort of our default is not our healthiest point.
Mm.
Like, by default, if I relax all of my muscles, I'll be on the floor laying down right now, you know, but I am intentionally standing because I think about this. We are actually intentionally standing. We intentionally stand for all of our podcasts. It creates more energy. Every day, you have a standing desk. That's intentional. Meaning, if we just do what is by default, we actually sink to our lowest point.
Mm.
And that's true of everything, right? And so it's about, if we communicate by default, our human nature is reaction, defensiveness, protection. And so if you, we, by default, we don't listen well by default. Now, I think that we can get better at those things, but I just want us to understand that when you communicate by the way you communicate by default is generally not healthy. And it can be retrained, but just understand if you find yourself in an unhealthy cycle or feeling a certain way again and again and again, it's because you're going to your default versus, oh, I need to learn new things.
Yeah. And without, I think if we leave things too nuanced, I know as I've listened to podcasts in the past, my mind automatically somehow excludes me from the group that they're talking about. I'm just like, oh, that's, I'm glad for everybody right. else listening to this podcast that needs to hear that because it's not me. Is that there's a 99% chance that you need to get better at communicating. And I think there's ways to increase your baseline, whether it's like, hey, I've done personal work. I'm triggered less. I ask questions first. I think there's just some habits.
Yeah.
But I also think all of us, without debate, can say, before I have a conversation or go into a meeting, I'm going to pause and have some intention.
Yeah.
I'm going to start first by asking two or three questions. I think these are just rules or principles we can live by that'll help all of us. Even if you think you're a great communicator now,
yeah,
you're probably not.
All right. Let me put a pin on this one, like or a cap on this one. Like, if you don't know how you, if you don't know your weaknesses in communication, then you have not dealt with them. Everyone has them. Mm-hmm. I know what mine are. Mm-hmm. And in a conversation, I have to tell myself, Andy, ask another question instead of talking. Mm-hmm. Andy, stop interrupting. Like,
stop cursing.
Stop.
No.
Stop blanking. No, I'm kidding. Sometimes that is true. Sometimes that is 100% true. That is not a joke.
He's good. He's
I'm pretty good most of the time. I'm good on the podcast. If you look through our podcast, there's never a little E on them, right? Because we edit those out. We edit those out. No, but my point is that if you don't know what your communication weakness is, that's a problem because everybody's got something. Yep. Everybody's got something.
Yep.
All right.
Last one here. I think this is something I'm still really trying to get understanding and awareness on is not understanding how other people are motivated. And I've had to outsource this a little bit. I think there's something in my intense personality that is so results oriented and personally driven that I have a really hard time that everyone does not wake up with some intention of I need to give my best today. I need to, you know, because my best is going to help others and help humanity. Like that's how society works is that we all try to do good all every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there's just this hang up in this whenever I sense or feel that people are not initiating interactions with me if they know there's a problem or asking questions to get better if they feel like, hey, I've kind of been in a coast for a while. And so while I have to make myself available and have great team meetings and share videos or books that are motivating to me with the team, I have learned I can't be the daily influence on that, even though it's necessary as a team with KPIs and different goals. Because if I stay stuck in that, what it does, I get frustrated quick and, yeah. and that's just not where I, you know,
this is really difficult, Sen, because I see someone drive a car and I go, I would never drive that car. Or someone paint their house a color and I go, I would never paint. Someone wear something. I'm like, I would never. Like the hard part of understanding how other people are motivated is you just go, I would never. Like I know someone who stopped working at a place and went to go work someplace four stories underground every day. They traded a beautiful view every day for working four stories underground and they're happy.
Hmm.
Like they see the sun and then they go and then they see the sun like 9 hours later.
Nice.
And they do the same thing all day long. And I'm like, I do not understand how you're motivated by that. So this is really hard as a leader is understanding that other people just have different motivations. Some people are super motivated by the fact that once they leave work, they don't think about work until they come into work the next day.
Yeah.
And as a leader, you're like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know?
And what I know is that I don't want 10 Stens running around this office or 20 Stens. So all different types of people are needed with different skill sets, different motivation levels. Like I get that.
Yeah.
And I think some of the biggest issues in history have come from people assuming that other people think the way they think or want what they want. Like, you know, everyone in the world wants democracy and it's like, well, so we're going to go give it to them. And then realize they want the way they've been doing it for thousands of years.
Right.
And so I think for us as leaders, there needs to be a sense of awareness. Because no matter how hard you fight this, you're not going to make everyone on your team like you. They're not going to be motivated like you.
Yeah.
So a healthy company needs to have a level of awareness of everybody. I think, again, assessments like DISC are helpful just for, hey, this is going to start a conversation.
Right.
It definitely doesn't do the hard work for you. The most difficult thing for me in this was when my company wasn't big enough to upload or outsource some of this to other team members,
yeah,
where I had to wear this hat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get through it, and it challenged me, and I did learn in certain ways. But then I was able to get to a place to where me living in my superpowers is not, you know, head of culture and HR.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not how I'm wired.
But you did a good job, as I've been around long enough to see some growth in the company and different people put in different positions. You did a good job of saying, I'm going to make note of this and then speak to that. Like, you know, I worked with someone once, and they literally had to put in, and this wasn't you, but I know you have to do it sometimes. It's like, oh yeah, ask them how they're doing, versus instead of just going right into the, this is what we're going to talk about today. Like, they had to give themselves a note, versus other people have to remember, oh yeah, we have to talk about work because I just want to talk about personal stuff all the time. That you can, this is something you can unlock and understand if you, even if you can't offload it. Like, and the great news I want to encourage you with is that other people, often their motivation is really simple. It's really simple. It's a word of encouragement. It's a small gift, mm-hmm. right? It's, hey, you can leave an hour early today just because. Like, it's not, oh my gosh, they need full health care and dental and, you know, 90 days off, every year. Like, yeah. That's not it. But if you take the time to understand how people are motivated and you remind yourself of it, literally put in a calendar, like, oh, I have to, this is affirmation day or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I did hear a story one time of a boss that was very poor at this, and they figured out that every like Tuesday at 10 o'clock, he would walk around and just affirm people. And it was like, in his calendar. And the response to the employees was, we don't care. We don't care that that he has to schedule it. We're just grateful that it's sincere.
Yeah.
So even if
that's
even
permission, if it, don't have shame if it feels kind of structured and robotic for you, because that's how it is for me. It's like, I need some help. To tap into that part of me, not because that part's not there, but it's just for whatever reason, not the part that I'm living out of consistently. Because what also is true, and I think what team members appreciate, is like, man, Sten gets stuff done. So this company's growing and we all have jobs.
Right.
So we like that about Sten.
Yeah.
And then I get some grace on the fact that, like, he's not by default, the biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
Like, you pick up a lot of that for our company, like fun, interactive, ask great questions. Like,
the greatest tracking team. People from what they're supposed to be doing. It's really one of my greatest contributions to the work environment.
What'd you guys do today?
Felt great. We laughed so much. But I will say that again, and I appreciate that, Sten, like your awareness of that, I think it's a good model, is on a very practical level. I hope you took a lot of things away today from what we talked about. Well, one of them is take the time to understand how people are motivated, and just, you can literally schedule this. Like, every other week or whatever, once a month or whatever it might be. And what's funny is I know when it's done to me here at this company, I know the level of intentionality of the gift I was given at Christmas by this company. It literally brought me to tears. And it was five small, very intentional things that I was like, they know. They got me. They know. They unlocked Andy's happiness. And I wasn't like, oh man, they studied me. It doesn't count. No, I felt appreciated.
Yeah.
Right. So take the time to understand how people are motivated and understand it doesn't have to be that expensive or complicated or uncomfortable. It's not like every day I need a hug to start the work. No, don't. It's like probably not going to be okay.
Yeah.
But if you do need a hug, buddy, I'm here for you.
Appreciate that, brother. Last thing is if right now you're feeling like that sounds great, I just don't have the time, find the time. There's something else in your schedule that needs to go.
You're going to find a time to hire some more people because they're going to quit. Yeah.
This will catch up with you. It will not be sustainable. It'll lead to more frustration. So even if it's a baby step, kind of figure out something you can do to increase your awareness and take some action that's small, practical, because this stuff matters.
Thanks, Sten.
Thanks, brother.